Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Shout out to all you dunkers. Thank you for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, how are you doing, man? How was your weekend? We did a really cool thing where we didn't mean to plan it. I am somehow wearing an Oregon shirt. You are wearing an Elks shirt. And we are here for the vibes.
Okay, first, it is a USC-themed shirt. Let's get the correction out there. No slander from you, good sir. Anyway, doing
allergies, sorry.
Ugh. Yeah, I see. Anyway, I'm doing well. The weekend was a good one. Enjoy some quality time. Watch some hoops. Got to see the fam on Sunday. That was cool. Well, for the FIFA players out there, we got LMBOFC, got some games in. That was fun doing pro clubs things. Nice mixture of like family fun, relaxation, and basketball. Can't ask for much more than that.
Yeah, you really can't ask much more for that. And because of that wholesome and happy content, I am going to delete all the slander I had in the intro.
And wait a minute.
We will continue on.
Well, now I'm curious and also concerned.
Got to match the energy of your team. You know, if you came in angry about the game and everyone else is hyped and ready to go and excited, you can't be that guy.
Well, not with that attitude, but I feel you. That's
clapping and pointing.
It's clapping and pointing indeed. All right. Well, with the pleasantries out of the way, let's get into some of the NBA news, or I guess the rumor mill, what's going on right now. We had reports from Woj and Shams. Talking about Boston Celtic interest in one Kevin Durant. And there, per Shams, there was an offer thrown out from Boston side that included Jaylen Brown, Derek White, and a pick. Brooklyn wants, let's just say they want a little bit more than that. How would you feel? Well, how do you feel about Boston allegedly being a player, but maybe that was some weeks ago, whatever. How do you feel about the fit?
Well, first off, we need a name for this segment. I'm going to lob out what that means. As an early entry, Dunkers, help me out.
All right.
So I read the initial Woj went first, right? KD, yes. Boston tweet. I was intrigued. I was surprised. It was also like 5 a.m, so I wasn't really paying attention. Mm-hmm. I just kind of calculated as respectfully messy. Yo, no one's really hitting us back like they were a week ago. So just to remind y'all, you know, we could go get Jaylen Brown if we really wanted to. Just so y'all know. But the timing is weird. And even if it's an old trade, why is it coming out now? We haven't heard any news about Kevin Durant in how long?
It's been some time. Like
the only Kevin Durant content we've gotten is him on TikTok, which is hysterical, by the way. I don't know how it works. I don't know how it works either.
Hashtag old and musty. I respect it.
Best part is a brush. That's hilarious. Anyways, the timing's weird. And also, Jaylen Brown's name being out there is weird. And then it being stated, you know, Boston offered Jaylen Brown and the Nets were like, nah, more. Very weird. But Jaylen Brown's name, you kind of hope would be like one of those, hey, breaking Celtics trade Jaylen Brown, as opposed to like a whole news cycle. He's probably still shaking his head right now. Also, back to my thoughts, respectfully messy. Didn't the Celtics just get the vibes right? Didn't they just figure this out? Like, wasn't this the first non-disagreement, non-Marcus Smart cusses player X out moment in a long time? And now we're at SMH?
Yeah, that was a fun, 6 months, I guess? 6.5 months? It had to be a new record. It's odd.
I'm still going to be respectfully messy before you deliver actual analysis. Can Boston and Brooklyn stop doing this with each other?
That would also be helpful.
Like just volleying massive trades with stars and picks. Like, can y'all just stop for a moment? Anyways, continue.
Gotta go with the devil you know, I guess. But that is an odd dynamic. I guess for me, like, I guess it does depend somewhat on how recent the talks were. Like if this was just a reminder, as you put it, then this really amounts to much of nothing. I will say, Jaylen Brown has never really felt secure in Boston, which is interesting to me. And his name being thrown out there, like, one, is just a logical name to throw out there if you're going to include Boston in talks, rather like rumored, sourced, whatever, or if you're just thinking of teams that could make a trade for a superstar. Like, he's going to pop up because he's a high level number two that allows you, in theory, to keep the rest of your team intact. It's always him. And so I find that interesting with the backdrop of him only being under contract, I think, for the next two seasons. But he can hit free agency pretty soon. And so I wonder, as we get like the shaking my head tweet, which, as someone that tweets out shaking my head for things I see on the timeline, things that happen in my personal life, or just because I want to, it's important to note that shaking my head could be for literally anything. It may not be connected to the talks. But if we are to go along that line, like, that's something to keep an eye on, I feel like.
I mean, once you hit a certain level and you play for a certain team, you're going to be the person in the trade rumors. Like, there's no Miami trade rumor that's going to exist without Tyler Hero's name. It's just kind of comes to territory.
Right.
I think if we're talking purely about Boston and you believe in the structure you've built and you came that close and you have the opportunity to get Kevin Durant and the cost is Jaylen Brown and some picks, probably do that, because defending Jason Tatum and also Kevin Durant does not seem fun. The issue is the Nets are going to want more. Like, more. Like, they want all of it. Like, they see what's coming. They know what they want, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
We can go to court. You can come back home. But if this happens, we're getting this. So just so y'all know, whether it's you, Boston, whether it's you, Miami, whoever it is, this is what we want. So I don't necessarily know. Like, I feel like the Nets are just going to slow play it.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly because they have to hit this trade. They have to. Like, this is going to be the return we're getting, and we'll move forward when that comes. End of story. Boring, but end of story.
Yeah. This is one you can't mess up in Brooklyn. I've been going back and forth on this since I woke up and saw the Woj report and also the Shams report. Because on one side, I see, like, hey, this is Kevin Durant. If Kevin Durant is available, you just do that because he's Kevin Durant. And I've seen, like, the Celtic fan sentiment to where it's like Jaylen's been homegrown. Obviously he's really good, but just how he's been brought up in Boston. He just played a major part where some may argue he was Boston's best player during the finals, like a month ago. I don't know if I would make that argument, but he played well enough to make that argument. And so I get it from the sentimental side as well. I kind of step back and I'm just like, Kevin Durant would be viewed as the upgrade that gets Boston over the hump. A simplified way of looking at it, because, again, he's Kevin Durant. But that's kind of what you'd be looking for. And so I look at what Kevin Durant is, and he's tremendous. I guess my question becomes, like, does Kevin Durant solve what plagued Boston? Is my thing. Because I look at how Golden State was able to defend Boston in the finals. And it felt like the half-court offense got muddy because of what Golden State was able to do.
You know who has a really good shovel?
Kevin Durant.
We can stand in this mud for a little bit. Trust you me. I have seen plenty of game where, hey, we got OKC in the mud. We're good. Oh, wait, he did the thing where he just shoots over everyone. This is fun. So does it fix every hole? No. Does it raise their ceiling as far as if defenses lock in? Yes. Mm-hmm. Because if you're locking in on Kevin Durant, look at how much resources Boston had to put towards defending him in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. Just in theory. So you're going to lock him on that way. How are you now going to do that also with Jason Tatum?
Gonna pray.
I'm just asking. That's a lot. So I don't disagree with your point. I don't think it's like a band-aid lifts everything, but if they are able to get him with what they've built, it's pretty tough.
I guess that's also the other part of it for me, because, like, one, he's Kevin Durant. He's better than Jaylen Brown. So I'm not gonna make the argument Jaylen Brown's better than KD. But, like, my question is, like, does he solve what their half-court issues were? Like, I don't think he completely solves them. And then once you consider, again, the proposed package was Jaylen Brown, Derek White, and a pick. If Boston, if Brooklyn is countering with, no, we don't want Derek White, we actually want Marcus Smart and maybe someone else, and then also picks. Like, the picks aren't going to matter too much for, like, how good Boston could be in the finals this year or wherever they land in the playoffs. But if you're also losing Smart, like, you're losing your best defender, and also, aside from Jaylen Brown, like, probably your best paint touch person on the roster right now. And so I just kind of wonder, like, what that infrastructure would look like offensively.
Again, I don't think Boston does all that, though. I think their offer is their offer. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll take Kevin Durant for this and this only. Like, we're not about to bust this up to get KD and then look like y'all. With all due respect.
Yeah, I don't know if you can put respectfully Messi on top of that.
What you mean? Or if I'm Boston, that's what I'm saying. I'm not, I saw what y'all did.
I got you. And that's also the beauty of where Boston is right now. They can say, hey, here is our offer that might just be better than everything else that's out there right now. You don't have to take it if you want more, but this is all we're doing. And so we are good with the roster that we have that we just added Malcolm Brogdon to and Gallo to, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it might be doing them a solid. Be like, hey, I need some help. Go ahead. You talk about that offer. We'll see who blinks.
I got you. So that's where I'm still like ruminating. When the news first came out about Kevin Durant demanding the trade, like one of the first teams I thought about was Boston. And my immediate thought was like, okay, I'm not even going to put them in the tweet that I put out. Cause like, they're just not going to trade Jaylen Brown. They're not going to be major players. If Jason Tatum's not going to be involved, Jaylen Brown's not going to be involved. There's nothing to talk about. And so now you fast forward a month or whatever, and we get this report. It's like, oh, so they would consider it. And I think that's where the Jaylen Brown contract comes into play more so than anything for Boston. Because Jaylen Brown has 2 years left and he's been in trade rumors. Anthony Davis, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Kawhi, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And even though you understand why, like, I could also imagine, like, it could get annoying to a certain extent. But even with that, Brown having 2 years left, KD has, what, four? Like, the extension is kicking in for him now. Like, you could argue there's more stability there with KD in terms of locking in the rest of your roster there. So I'm just going back and forth on it right now.
Well, you can go back and forth for the next month, man.
Yeah, it doesn't look like we're any closer to a conclusion on this thing here. I guess while we're on the star chase, just a quick thing. James Harden finally signed the extension. 2 years, a shade under $69 million. Cool. Congrats. Get your money.
Did you just go with a good for him for James Harden signing a contract extension?
I mean, no. But
you're
like
in mid-season form, Nikias. I like to see it. Stay in his shape. Muscle watch.
We appear to be on muscle watch with James Harden. He does the pictures that we've seen, which they're pictures online. Only so much you can take from those. He does seem to be putting in some work. He's done some interviews over the offseason talking about his health. Well, I'm finally feeling good. Finally have a full offseason to get back right.
Hey, man. Hey, it appears he has heard the noise and he has had enough. Mm-hmm. I am expecting some big things from James Harden. A reminder type of year.
I'd like to see it.
Based on the comments. And I can't wait to do the victory lap against you, good sir. As far as the deal goes, it gave the Sixers some flexibility. They gave him a player option. I feel like a really nice little dap. Welcome back. We're good. Now, to be respectfully messy, there had to be some sort of text. I turned down a few million dollars and you got PJ and that's great, but I did not expect moves 2 and 3 to be Daniel House and D'Anthony Melton.
Well, see, I thought you were going, I feel like that was just for me. That's amazing. I thought this was going to be like a traveling queen shot. D'Anthony Melton. I don't understand why you slant. You know what? I'm not falling for the trap. I'm not doing it. Not doing it. I am not doing it. Steve is muted and laughing himself into a fit. This is beautiful. He did what you did what he was designed to do. All right. Shout out to James Harden. I hope he does come back healthy. Go ahead.
A good offense, a good set. You need good design.
Yeah.
Misdirection.
Yeah.
And execution.
Yeah. I bet. You know who they could have signed at the minimum? KZ Akpala.
That would have been a bad move. Anyways, shout out to Monty Williams for the extension, by the way.
Wow. Yes, and shout out to Monty Williams for the extension. I'm glad Phoenix finally got the extensions out of the way. Question mark, question mark, question mark.
Speaking of Phoenix, what about the Mercury Rising?
What about the Mercury Rising? Let's get into some of the games that we've watched since we last.
Now, let's get into this article you wrote about Sophie Cunningham, sir. Let's talk about that, buddy. Try to roll that out. Folks, man.
Go ahead.
We're watching Mercury Storm. And longtime dunkers, you're well aware of Nikias' thoughts about the disagreements when it comes to Sophie Cunningham. He was oddly quiet during our watch party in regards to Sophie Cunningham.
Oddly quiet. Wow.
Oddly quiet. Not a lot of antic talk. A lot of, hey, good play, good design. I was thinking he was up to something, but I thought no more of it. And then this man puts the sirens up, new words alert, and there's Sophie Cunningham on a Saturday. The shameless Duncan.
The shameless. Unbelievable. I feel like all of our Sophie conversations have been me pointing out the antics and you pointing out, like, hey, she's doing things, though.
Yeah.
And so I'm right.
And then you turn it into an article.
And so I write about the things she's doing. And aside of a quick little nugget in the piece, I mostly leave the antics alone. And now I'm shameless.
Yeah, that is the definition of shameless behavior. I'm not looking it up. Anyways, back to that big Mercury win. That was a fun game, kind of. It was an odd game.
Mm-hmm.
It was the last regular season meeting of Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi. Shout out to two living legends. And it immediately changed when Tina Charles fouled Skylar Diggins-Smith. A little face to the hand to the face action. And mm-hmm. Skylar Diggins-Smith said, you know, she did that expletive on purpose.
Yes.
And then lost her mind for the rest of the night. Just an unreal performance. And then Diana Taurasi also lost her mind at the same time. Did you know that when Skylar Diggins-Smith and Diana Taurasi both scored 20 or more points this year, the Mercury are 3-1?
I did not know that until this very moment. So thank you for that.
And they are 7-2 when they both score 18 or more. You're welcome.
It's good stuff.
Could they be the best backcourt in the W, Nikias?
This was said during the broadcast from, I think, Cindy Brunson. And I heard it and I'm just like, no, that's not the case. This was early in the first half when this came out. I was like, no.
This was said by the Mercury broadcast.
This was said by the Mercury broadcast. But also, no. And I end up tweeting about it. I'm just like, I know I didn't hear this because absolutely not.
Okay. So where do you
and
put
so
him?
Huh?
Where do you put him?
Are we doing this bit again? I don't have them one. I think that's the most important portion of the conversation.
Okay.
I will say, though, this was said during the first half. You mentioned how Skylar went off. Diana Taurasi also went off. They ended up combining for North for 60 points. And I'm just like, well, and I said this during the watch party. Like, I disagree with them being the best backcourt in the W. But this turned out to be a fantastic game to make the case.
Would it be fair to say, do they potentially have the highest ceiling backcourt in the W?
I can see that. Like, offensively, I definitely see it. I think what keeps me from having them one is that, like, Skylar is soundly a good defender. Like, Diana isn't that anymore.
Yeah, that's what we're waiting for, folks.
But I mean, that's what keeps me from making the proclamation. Because offensively, again, like, Skylar has been on an absolute tear all season long, and Diana hasn't shot the ball well from deep for most of the year. She is, after I put it in the piece, she's averaging 24 points a game over the last five, and she's falling away from deep. And so, like, when she has it going, she still draws two to the ball. That unlocks the playmaking. And then she is just an unabashed gunner as a pull-up shooter. And when she has it going, there isn't much you can do with that. And so when you have those two in conjunction, like, yeah, they can just absolutely break your defense. There isn't much you can do with that.
And to me, that Friday, you saw the full capacity of what the Mercury are trying to do post Tina Charles.
Yes.
Play small, spread the floor, attack, try and keep your off rhythm on the other end. And when those two guards have it going, it balances a lot of the other things out. And I think them being able to mix in zone against Seattle really helped. If they can continue to roll that out, that's going to help them. If nothing else, get stops, attack and transition, maybe face a scrambling defense, stay out of the half court to where you don't have those moments where, oh, wait, we can't beat anyone off the bounce. No one's helping. Dot, dot, dot. So it's going to be fun to see if the Mercury are kind of putting it together, or if it's just going to be a night-to-night deal. And now I will give you the ISO for Sophie Cunningham thoughts, folks. Uninspected
what
ISO.
I can't say that I would expect this segue earlier in the season. As I was writing the piece, I was like, this is not what I expected to be writing. Like, in a literal sense as well. Because I went into that Saturday like, okay. You mentioned some of the comments I made on some of the sets that Phoenix ran in the half court. I went into this going to do like an explain one play type piece. Quick 500, 600 words, like, okay, here are one of the things. This is what happened. This is why it worked, et cetera. And so, like, I'm going through clips, and I was like, okay, let me look at some of the numbers. Like, let me see exactly what the stats are since Sophie hit the starting lineup. And it's 6-4. They have the fourth best offense in the league. I think they're sixth or seventh in defense, so average-ish. Net rating over 9 with Sophie on the court. And specifically with her at the 4. I'm just like, wait a minute. Like, this is actually a thing. Like, we talked about the lineup change when it first happened, and we haven't really talked about it since. And so to see everything kind of zoomed out and to see the effect that she's had on the offense, again, like the guards drive it. Skylar Diggins-Smith is their best player. Diana Taurasi, again, can draw 2 to the ball, can pull it whenever. But Sophie at the 4 helps them. Like, one, she's shooting well over 40% from 3 during this stretch. That floor spacing helps. She isn't just a spot-up threat. She's someone that can get it off of movement as well. They've used her as a screener in some of their horn sets. They're able to further complicate what defense are able to do. And from that, like, space for the drivers. Breonna Turner, or Redacted, like we've talked about some of her offensive struggles on the pod. If it's just a spread attack and she's the only roller and she has a bunch of space to roll into, like, it makes things easier for her. And with some of the things that Phoenix runs, having a dive option while also having Sophie Cunningham lift, while also having like Skylar space or Diana space, whichever one doesn't have the ball. And, you know, the weak point there becomes like Shea Petty, but she can knock down open shots. And so Phoenix is just kind of able to move you around. And when they're able to play with some semblance of pace, which they haven't done during this stretch, last in pace over the last 10 games. But when they play with some kind of tempo in the half court and they get your defense rotating, it's a tough scene. So if you're making the kick to Shea Petty, rotating out to her, now she's making the kick, that's going to Skylar or Diana or Sophie, who again is bombing away from 3. And she's been good enough, physical enough defensively for the lineup to hold water. And so I think it's fair to acknowledge the impact that she's had on both ends of the floor so far. That concludes my ISO.
So you got to segue us out of this one, King. Yep.
That's all you.
I think we found the answer for what if she won.
What? No. Oh, man. Speaking of winning, the Liberty finally got one. They beat
Whoa, Chicago. Like, hold on. I don't like the framing of that. All right.
Hey, wait.
I don't like the way you just framed that.
Hey, they were on a losing streak. They snapped the losing streak by beating Chicago Sky, who flew in for the game on game day after flight issues and such.
But I don't like the framing of that either. Can we put some respect on the Liberty's name? They had 19 camp day games in a row. No more early morning tents for the Liberty. Back to business now. But continue.
Back to business. So the issue was with my segue, and the better one is blaming children. That I just want to make sure we have that on record. Is that the better alternative here?
No, they just struggle with those early games.
For the,
you're not gonna get me to blame children. Get out of here. This is why you're shameless.
Wow,
just the shameless episode. That's what you should name it.
I think we have our podcast title. All right, fair enough. Anyway, the Liberty were able to get a 3-point win over Chicago Sky. I'm going to give this to you. What were your major takeaways from this one? What stood out to you? What caught your eye, etc.?
It looked like one of those games, and we joke about it every single time we watch this guy play. It does not matter about your 9-2 run to start the game. You're going to be losing 6 minutes later. What was it, sure enough, like 10-9, Sky, after a hot start from the Liberty?
The Liberty got out on this run. It's the, what was the exact thing? Like, with 3:40 left, the score was going to be, I think, 10-9 or something like that. And ended up being like the 4:30 mark instead of the 3:30 mark.
Yeah, I was a minute, Sky was a minute early.
Yeah, I'm just like, yo, this is some wild stuff.
It was a fun game. I think that it was a good game for the Liberty to find a way to win. Having to deal with the Sky's defense, having to figure it out offensively, not necessarily having the easiest of shooting nights, not necessarily being able to finish in the paint as much as they could have. I found it very
funny. You can say that again.
Easy.
Oh, hey, man. Look, I just want to say.
Easy.
There were so many missed layups in this game. So many looks. There was a point during the game, we'll throw one quick Nikai Litnik out there and I'll give you the microphone back. But there was one point in the game where I pulled up PvP stats. They track stats live, which is a godsend for me. The Liberty were 13 of 30 inside of four feet. And I'm just like, how does this happen? You're shooting 40% from three at this point. How are you nearly shooting as well from three as you are at the rim? It's infuriating.
You pulled out the Nikai Lytics to slander the Liberty and talked about Miss. Anyways,
go ahead.
I thought Sabrina had some tough buckets down the stretch because the Sky were all after her. Rebecca Gardner was not having any of it. On ball, off ball. We're going to take away these actions. We're going to bother you in pick and roll. We're going to pressure you. If you want to bring a screen up, that's fine. Here's a switch with Candace Parker. Please enjoy that. And it felt kind of like at times, first time in a while, was a lot of, Sabrina's doing a lot with the ball in her hands, which seems redundant considering how good she is. But the best version of the Liberty is the mixture of her off ball, her on ball. I think the Sky were able to disrupt the rhythm, but Sabrina had some tough buckets down the stretch to get that
going. The go-ahead shot at the end.
Ridiculous. The pull-ups, it was a fun time. It was a fun time. We'll see how it goes, but you can see kind of the balance shifting. How did you feel about the Dangerfield minutes for Liberty?
That's something I've been kind of keeping an eye on over the last couple of weeks. It really stood out to me back when I was in Vegas for the Aces Liberty game, where she started. I can't even say she didn't play well. It just wasn't a super noticeable impact. And the Liberty start the second half with Michaela Onyewere. And I'm just like, huh. So they're going with more length. This is interesting. Sabrina's going to have the ball more. Like, I get it. And yeah, that was the game the Liberty put up, I think, 116. And so they very much just had it going pretty much the whole game. But that was a shift they made. And that's a shift that, if it isn't her, it's one of the other Liberty guards kind of replacing Crystal Dangerfield in the starting 11 second half. I'm just like, okay, this seems to be a pretty consistent sub. But like, why is it happening? And what does Crystal need to do to prevent that from happening? It's kind of where my mind is going. And to your point. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. Well, I was going to say, I think it's less about Dangerfield because she starts for a reason. Like, her ability to play is what helped spark the Liberty's run in the first place. So now she could run the one, Sabrina could play off ball, and they could get more of the movement. I just think the Liberty have options. And one of the options is Sabrina just plays with the ball, which then allows you to say, hey, do we need this or do we need that?
Yeah, that's fair.
But I think that's probably more of it. But continue.
Okay. And quick correction on my part, referencing the Liberty Aces game that I was there. Wasn't Michaela Onyewere that dealt with, it was Dee Richards that made the second half sub. So let me get that correction out of the way. But the point still stands. Like, the second half sub has got, the third quarter sub has kind of been consistent with that. And so, again, like as you said, like it feels like things flow better for the Liberty when you have the other guards, whether that's Marine or that is Crystal Dangerfield getting downhill. Like, if you're able to pressure defense with them and have Sabrina attacking a tilted defense, or if she's your second option in the set, then that's a little bit more dangerous. So I wonder how Sandy Brondello is feeling about the on-ball reps that we're getting from Crystal right now. and if there's more that she can do in that way to kind of have her imprint offensively. Because defensively, like, there's only so much you can do with the size, but, like, she does get into ball handlers. Like, I don't think she's a liability in any stretch.
I think she's a valued part of the rotation, a la Rebecca Allen, for, hey, we need this, bring us this. And then if we need this, we go get someone else.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of deal. I think they've liked that fit, that lineup, which is part of why Marine is coming off the bench, because, hey, Rebecca Allen's back.
Mm-hmm.
So we like how that looks with that lineup. I mean, the Liberty are just kind of an odd team in that way, because, you know, Stephanie Dolson, I thought, had a really good game against Chicago. Played 18 minutes. Side note, very Liberty for Dolson to get 10 shots up in 18 minutes and Hanzu to get 13 up in 22 minutes. You'd love to see it.
Dude, like those. Yeah, they're not shy. A little surprising Stephanie Dolson got a shot something like that, but Hanzu is absolutely not shy.
You know the vibes is going up.
It's always going up. On the Chicago front, well, reference the Sabrina go-ahead, end up being the game winner in that one. Candace Parker had a chance to put Chicago in position, and she essentially got single coverage and missed.
She got everything she wanted on that play. It was a cross screen, throw it in the post. She went right to work, got to her spot, just didn't fall. Were you surprised by the single coverage or?
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. Like, I was surprised by the single coverage.
Is that more the Liberty's defense or speaking to what the Sky have around it?
Probably the latter. Like, I get not wanting to create you don't want to create an easy catch and shoot opportunity to potentially bury you. But also, like, just going back over to play, like, help could have came from somewhere that wasn't leaving, like, an alley quickly open, who didn't shoot well at all. What, they 1 of 10 from the floor in that game against the Liberty? So, like, it was an off night for her, but I understand, like, not wanting to leave her on a final play.
But, I think, if I recall correctly, I think they went pick the picker on the weak side with Alamon, Miesemann, and Copper. So the help probably could have been off Gardner, but you don't want to give any of those other people a shot. So, you know, I'm a big fan of tough twos. I respect tough twos. Hey, you make a tough two, you got to beat me. But the Sky are fun, man. The Sky are really fun, and they're really starting to put some things together. It's become more and more impressed. It's going to be tough to beat this team in the playoffs.
We talked about a little bit on the last episode. Like, there does seem to be some separation happening at the top. So we'll see what the Aces have to say about that tomorrow, or I guess today by the time this episode drops. The Commissioner's Cup is on Tuesday at 8:30. It is an Amazon Prime exclusive, which, good on the W for getting that bag, and good on Amazon for trying to acquire those rights and being successful in acquiring those rights. Also, if you don't have Amazon Prime, kind of stinks that the in-season tournament that the W has been pushing all year long, the championship game just can't be seen if you don't have Amazon Prime. Like, I'm not smart enough to figure out TV rights stuff, so I'm not going to overstep. But I would just say, in a vacuum, it would be nice if there was a way for that game to be more accessible. Like, I don't know if you could do Amazon plus something else to where it doesn't cut into the money for Amazon. I don't know. But that's a bit unfortunate. It just feels like a little bit of a missed opportunity there. It's the game, and it is the only game on Tuesday, which stinks because there are no games on Monday and there will not be any games on Wednesday. So, like, if you don't have Amazon Prime, the last WNBA basketball you may have seen was on Sunday. Like, doesn't seem ideal, but that concludes my viewership rant for this.
I mean, if you're going to go out Amazon Prime, that concludes this podcast.
No, my beef isn't with Amazon Prime in particular. It's that the game is only on Amazon Prime. I don't have issue with Amazon Prime, the entity in this case.
Well, what about the Sparks and Aces? Speaking of those Aces, what a homestand they had. 2-1, eh? What were your thoughts, Nikias?
Well, didn't get off to the best start because the Atlanta Dream just kind of blitzed them from the start. And I got slandered for saying that the game was over in the first quarter based on how the Dream came out and how the Aces came out. And sure enough, it ends up being a double digit loss. But you know what? That's neither here nor there. Either way, 2-1 home stretch is technically a success. I don't know how great I feel about it because I don't know if their issues were like fixed in this case. Loss to the Dream. They beat the Fever, which who hasn't beaten the Fever this season? Young team, a team that I'm excited about long term. Like there are just some questions. And you cap it off with the Sparks, who have talent, but they were also playing with 8 players on Saturday. And they were missing players like Lexi Brown and that one as well. So, and you've talked a little bit about during the watch parties, like teams that can get into their guards or teams that go under on their guards can kind of flatten Aces out in the half court. And so like not having a point of attack defender slash shooter like Lexi Brown, that hurts. Defensively, like you don't get that challenger for the Aces. And offensively, the Aces brought back some zone against the Sparks and you don't have Lexi out there to potentially bomb away from that. So it's, again, it helps in the standings. I think they're only a game behind Chicago now, but like in terms of what were the issues ailing the Aces, like there are still some of the lulls in the half court. Like I'm still a little bit worried about what the bench is and what the bench rotation is. And the defense has gotten better. It's gotten a little cleaner, but it still isn't at the level that it was in the beginning of the season.
I think the Aces are firmly in iron out some of the kinks mode to me. I think, I don't want to say they are who they are, but when they do X, they're very good. When Y happens, there might be some question marks. And so if the defense is bringing it, you got to watch out. If the guards are playing, scoring, you got to watch out. We know that. The questions for me as I watch the Aces going forward, what's it look like when the guards don't have it going? When teams are able to keep the ball in front? Are they going to keep sliding under pick and rolls? Can you make Aja Wilson a roll and pop threat? Or a team just going to say, hey, we're just going to give you one of those? What do the lineup combinations look like? Can your defense hold up against certain players and certain play styles? And is your base going to be strong enough that you trust it? Are you going to be doing a variety of things based on what the other team is doing? Those are probably the questions I'm looking at more than the wins and losses. They can kind of move in the right direction in there. They'll be probably more built for the playoffs. They have a distinct style. They have successful players. They have a lot of talent. Now it's just going to be a function of doing it.
They're going to have to. Like, the Sky aren't going anywhere. We've seen how much talent the Storm have. They've done some lineup shifting of their own. We get into shortly, but they're squarely going to be there. Elena Deladon is playing consistent basketball again, which I guess schedule adjacent. They're just not playing for a week, which is cool for them to get rest and reconfigure, but also like, man, kind of miss watching the Mystics play. Like we just haven't seen them, but then you have this 3-day break and yeah, cool. But they're also, there as well. And so it's going to be important for the Aces to kind of iron out those kinks. You mentioned, you know, what happens if teams are able to keep them in front. You mentioned it during the watch party against the Dream. Like, can they keep people in front? Because what Tiffany Hayes was able to do to them to the tune of 31 points, and a lot of those were just a lot of transition baskets, but also it's just like, okay, let me get a screen or not. I'm just going to square you up, put my shoulder into your chest, and get to the free throw line, score the bucket, or both. It's like, oh, could be a little problematic. You may want to keep things in front because, like, we've talked about the Aces kind of sifting through defensive coverages. If you're going to stick with switching and teams are able to just drive past or through your players, what does that do? You're flattening out the actions, but you're still getting beat. And so those are still fruitful touches in the paint. That's still putting your defense in rotation. So what does that mean? If you're getting blasted and dropped, that's a problem. And it doesn't seem like they're mixing in a little bit more of the two to the ball. It isn't to the level that it was at the beginning of the season in terms of frequency or in terms of efficiency right now. So I just want to see them continue to tighten things up. Like this would have been the stretch of games before you get into the Commissioner's Cup with Chicago that you see the fruits of that. And so for them to start with the Atlanta loss, I'm just like, yo, that's not what you want.
That's tricky homestand. It's tricky homestand. Yeah, I think it's good for them to have gone 2-1. Learn a little bit, still get some wins, move forward. Against some competition you may not be all the way up for, all that good stuff. Sparks, man, I just want to see the Sparks be healthy.
Yeah.
It's less about talent for me with the Sparks and more just about time. Like, every time it feels like they're getting everyone back and about to do the thing, X happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like the lineup's starting to come together. I feel like each player that's been playing has had a moment or is moving in the right direction. And then it's like, But there'd be a tricky team to face in the playoffs. I'll put it that way. Like, I thought back on it with the podcast with Kevin Pelton on the Storm. I don't know if the Storm want to see the Sparks. It seems wild because last time they saw them, I think they won by a lot. But I don't know.
No, I feel you because, and I think this is a nice segue into the Storm and talking about their lineup change up front. One thing that Kevin said was that why he said the Connecticut Sun in particular were a tough matchup for the Storm was because of the size that the Sun can provide up front and having some struggles with dealing with some of those bigger centers. Like Liz Cambage would certainly be that example in this case. And so just to go into the Storm thing, we talked about it when Tina Charles was added to the Storm roster. It's like, hey, is she going to come off the bench? She's going to start. I was like, hey, Ezzie's playing super well. She's very important to the defense. Ezzie should remain the starting lineup. You were on the other side of that. Ezzie started to begin. Tina Charles got the start against the Phoenix Mercury on Thursday. She also got the start on Sunday against the Dream. And it looks like she is just going to be the starter moving forward. So, Steve, I will concede the floor to you. What are your thoughts?
Why you concede the floor to me? Just say sorry, like you said to that Knicks fan.
I am sorry. I was wrong. It would appear that Tina Charles is going to be the starter here.
What are your thoughts? I want your pure, unadulterated thoughts on this.
I don't know if you want those. No, in all seriousness, I get it if you're able to bottle up the first half that Tina Charles had on both ends against Atlanta, in which the first minute of that game, the literal first minute of the game, was her drawing a double team, kicking out Jewel Loy for a three, getting a block on a post up, then scoring another bucket. And you zoom out to the first half in general, and she hit 4 threes in the first half. And so she's drawing doubles on the block and forcing defenses to rotate there. She's picking, popping, or spotting up and knocking out shots from the perimeter. And more importantly, I also contributed some of this to Ezzie just not having a good defensive game. Like, it's okay for great defense players to not have good games all the time. She didn't look well. Tina Charles is stronger than Ezzie. Like, she can handle post-ups better just in terms of the frame and the strength that she has. And so I certainly understand the thinking from the Storm standpoint. We talked about this with Kevin Pelton. For all the talent the Storm have, they were, at the time of that podcast anyway, they were the 7th best offense in the W. Like, technically below average. And it's just like, wait, why is that the thing? So if you're adding Tina Charles into the starting lineup, she's a pressure point. Rihanna Stewart's a pressure point. Jewel Loy's also a pressure point. And so I kind of get where you want to juice the offense. And if she can hold up enough on defense, then I understand.
Well, I guess the big thing for me was just how much of a focus she was in that Dream game. I know you talked about the first half. I think start the second half, first 2-3 plays was just 4 out, 1 in. Let's throw it to Tina Charles in the post, see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's potentially using this time to reestablish her as a pressure point. And I'll say, hey, what's it look like when we just do this? Y'all going to double? Cool, we have something to play out of now. Instead of having to search, now we can mix in our other things. So I think it's just trying to find another facet. It was also interesting the Storm played zone against the Dream.
A lot.
I love when a team, someone does something to a team and then they're like, you know what? Good idea. That was dope. We should also do that. And so you talk about Tina Charles defensively. Well, if all she has to do is play zone.
You can make that work. And that's what made the opening stretch so funny, because Tina Charles just loses her mind on both ends of the floor. We get the early timeout from Atlanta. Tanisha Wright gets teed up. And so you get the technical free throw from, I think, Breonna Stewart to go up 9-0. And then the first possession after the technical free throw is the storm in zone. It's just like, yo, this is nasty.
Rude behavior.
That's just rude. So I guess the bellwether for me is just going to be how Tina Charles holds up defensively. Like, if it's what it looked like on Sunday, combined with the presence she is on the offensive end, totally get it. Totally understandable. I also zoomed back to Thursday, and it was an ugly start for both teams offensively. But just in terms of what Phoenix was trying to accomplish, it was a lot of going at Tina Charles and pick and roll. And they had her playing a little higher, playing close to the level of the screen, just so she couldn't get ate up and drop. But that was opening some things for the Mercury, which kind of, again, highlights they have Sophie at the four. They're spreading you out, makes decisions tougher for everyone to rotate behind that. And so I'm just like, okay, if she's a pressure point defensively, now it's like, what do the offensive touches have to look like to warrant her getting, you know, starting over Ezzie in that case? Because Ezzie isn't going to be picked on like that defensively.
I think it's a reverse ceiling type of deal, though. So I will withhold, because I think that Mercury game was deeply personal.
Yeah, you can say that again.
So I will continue to evaluate and see what it looks like there. But I think, again, if you have Tina Charles and we're making a run for this year, we got to see what this year looks like. And to raise that ceiling, we got to see what Tina can bring. So I think ultimately that's the goal. They're trying to win. They're trying to win.
I got you. And I will zoom out and say, this is a really good problem to have if you're Seattle. Do I want to play my center, who's a most improved player candidate and also an all-defensive team candidate who's growing on offense? Or do we want to play a future Hall of Famer that can draw double teams almost all the time and also hit threes when she has it going? And can also help our rebounding that has been bad for most of the season. Like, if those are the choices you have, you're probably in a pretty good spot overall. And even with them working this stuff out, like the Storm or top five seed right now. So, good problem for them to have. I am intrigued. I do think Ezzie's going to make this decision a lot easier if her defensive impact is what it was during the Dream game. Like, that just can't be her. And again, like, great players just have off games sometimes. So it's not a referendum of her season or anything like that. But she has to bring it. Like, the pressure is certainly on her to bring it now if she's to reclaim the starting spot. If not, like, the pedigree and the resume is always going to lean towards Tina Charles in this case. And like you said, this is a win now season. Like, this is potentially a flyer on Tina Charles. Like, I don't know what her free agency is going to be like next offseason, or like, is she going to be a retirement case? Like, I don't know. But this is a pretty short window, so I understand Seattle want to go all in with it. So Ezzie's going to have to bring it. You know, the odds are against her in this case. So we'll just have to see. On the Dream side, this has been a weird stretch for them. Like, they've had a tough schedule. You know, you lose to the Storm, there's no shame in that. They beat the Aces. But I don't know. I guess I'm kind of in a weird place for them, because on one hand, I'm intrigued by the offense, especially what Tiffany Hayes has been able to bring for them. And the rim pressure has been needed. What Aerie McDonald's been able to do off the bench has been needed as well. It's their offense still feels in a weird place to me, though. Because even when it's working with a Tiffany Hayes getting downhill and stuff, it doesn't feel like the flow is completely there yet with them. And I don't know if my expectations are just too high because they've been much better than I anticipated at this point. And I just kind of raised my level for them, or what? I just feel like I'm in a weird place with Atlanta right now.
So are they.
That's fair. But I don't know what to do. They seem to be firmly a playoff team right now, though that's going to be a jumbled mess. And go ahead.
They're virtually tied with the Mercury.
Yeah.
Firmly. What you mean? the difference between 6 and 11 is 3 games. Firmly. Firmly.
See, baby, my level is too high for them right now.
Firmly.
I will say, like, on that point, I do believe in their defense. Like, their defense has been strong pretty much all year long. And I think, again, adding Tiffany Hayes to the mix, provided she can stay healthy, because she's had some scares this week. provided she stays healthy, like, the framework is there for them to be a two-way force, or at least annoy a team above them in the stand. But man, if it doesn't work, not a Mercury Rush.
You seem conflicted. It's all right, man.
I am conflicted with that letter right now.
Happens to the best of us.
Yeah, I suppose it does.
Well, you're conflicted to buy or sell the second townhome, so it's fine.
Okay, that's...
The hashtag is Mr. AVO. What's up? What'd you have?
Anyway, if we can go back to the top of the standings for a moment, we do have the Commissioner Cup game. I promise not to complain about the viewing process
anymore.
Now
you want to do a Commissioner Cup preview? You just bashed the whole concept for 25 minutes.
I did not bash the
concept. Talk about the preview? What is this?
I did not bash the concept. I just want everyone to be able to watch it.
Shout out to Sarah Kustak. Ace of Sky, I feel like it's the same game every time. So, is Courtney Vandersloot playing?
She is playing.
Sky.
She is back. That's is it.
Defense. Defend the Aces guards. Get them in the mud. Find a way to grind it out offensively. Think they win. I think James Wade is still mad that somebody kept telling him that the Aces were the best team in the W.
They were at the time. Like, I don't
know. Yeah, these are keep saying it to me.
I respect the energy.
And then he became the best team in the W. So what now?
He won.
Deliver me your thoughts on Ace of Sky. Because I feel like it's the same version of the same game. Either the Sky do the thing or the Sky can't make a shot and the Aces win. There's only two versions of Ace of Sky.
Yeah, like it's weird because as we've seen in the first two matchups. And again, one of the matchups includes the Sky completing the biggest comeback in WNBA history. But in order to have the biggest comeback in WNBA history, you also have to be down a lot of points. And so like with their scheme, the Aces have found success for large pockets of time, being able to pass around the pressure and attack those gaps and shoot well enough from three to extend leads. So like the outline for them is there. Like the blueprint is there for them. And they have the talent to execute that, which cannot be said for a lot of teams in the W. So why Chicago just kind of blasts teams at the bottom of the standings. So coming off of that kind of loss to Chicago, I do feel like the Aces are going to gear up for this one. They have to. They have the personnel to get it done. I think what's going to be a key for me to watch is like what happens when the first and second subs are coming in. Because Chicago has a better bench. Like that just is what it is. I wonder if the staggering is going to be any different from the Aces side. Or do they further shorten the rotation? Do we see like a 38-minute game from Kelsey Plum instead of 35, 36? Like I wonder how hard they're going to go with this, especially with no game Wednesday. Just curious to see how the rotation changes at all. Because again, like the blueprint is there. Like the Aces have the shooting. They have the playmaking. Like Chelsea Gray has just been on an absolute tear. And as much as Chicago can fluster teams at pick and roll with how they're hedging out with their bigs, particularly with Candace Parker involved, Chelsea Plum isn't scared of a hedge. Like, she can direct traffic still and get the ball where it needs to go. So the Aces seem, they are a good foil for Chicago. Got to see what the execution is going to look like. Also want to see what the rotation is going to be like. I kind of think the Aces are able to pull this one off on Tuesday.
We got Nicoptimist Prime.
How long have you been sitting on that one?
Solid 12 months.
Wow. I think this says more about me. You've been waiting on me to be optimistic about something. Oh, no.
Come on, you gotta get shots up. Shoot or shoot.
Yeah, that's... I'll give you that one. That was solid.
Come on.
Didn't know you had that one in the tuck. That was a good one.
I'm in my bag. This is what happens when you bring free throws back.
I see. Do you have... Go ahead.
Speaking of...
here we go.
I got some free throws. I'll head to the line.
All right.
Who's more annoyed with the refs, Diana Taurasi or Candace Parker?
Yes.
Okay. How do you feel, Nikias, about falling for the Seattle Storm social media pump fake? And are you bowing down to the queen or rising for the queen?
One, immensely annoyed. Immensely annoyed. And to clarify, like, annoyed in a social media sense. Like, I'm not actually going to lose sleep over this. But immensely annoyed. I see the tweet at like 5:30 Eastern. And it's like the queen speaking or whatever the heck the phrasing was. 6 o'clock, be there. Be there, be square, whatever. I was like, huh, this is interesting. This is going to be some big news. Is this Sue Bird saying she's actually going to run it back for another year? Is Breonna Stewart getting an extension so she doesn't go to the New York Liberty in the offseason? Who knows? Let's see what's happening. Are we going to get some new jerseys or something? Is there a new sponsorship deal? Has a legend been added to the coaching staff? I don't know. This is neat. So I'm just chilling, waiting for 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific time to roll around. And it's a 15-second tweet, basically kicking off the Breonna Stewart for MVP campaign, which, objectively, she has a very strong case for MVP. Very strong case for MVP. She has been tremendous on both sides of the ball. We just did our mid-season awards. Like, she's up there for MVP for both of us. She's up there for Defensive Player of the Year for both of us. Absolute baller. Great. Why the heck did you tease a 15-second clip with nothing else? What are we supposed to do with that? At least give us the clip and then a thread of Breonna Stewart leads the W in XYZ. She has the most 20-10-5 games or whatever the case. There were so many things that could have been done aside from that. And I don't understand why all of our times were wasted. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
I mean, the play that I just ran worked excellently. Beyond belief at how well that worked. Didn't think that set would work. Anyways, I just kind of scroll and be like, oh, that's neat. Yeah. Another question for you, Nikias. So you dunked on the commissioner of the W, quote tweeting the cities that have shown interest in the W because it said Florida on there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you also know in that tweet you blocked out the name of Portland with your closed captioning? Would you like to answer for yourself?
No, I didn't know that.
Okay, that's fine. Don't worry about it. Let's bring a favorite back for the W.
Okay.
Now pick some players.
This should be good.
Sabrina Ionescu or Kelsey Plum?
Oh.
Oh, boy. Got him on the first one. This is going to be some good stuff. All right, folks. Buckle up.
Oh, man. I'll put it like this. I think Kelsey's had a better season. And so if that's the framing of it, I'll take Kelsey. I would rather have Sabrina moving forward.
What? So is this the first time the answer was no? What are you listening to? Diplomatic immunity? What's going on?
Wow. I'll take Kelsey. Actually, on the Kelsey part, quick props to her for it was an interview that she did with Rachel Galligan. Great piece. She opened up about her mental health and some of the struggles that she's had throughout her career. Really appreciate the transparency there. A very important conversation was had. I encourage everyone to check that out if you have not already.
Yes, please read it. Embrace your journey. Reflect and learn. We don't know much. We'll figure it out. You only got one of these. Kalia Copper or Jackie Young?
Jackie Young.
Nneka Nwumike or Jonquel Jones?
Nneka Nwumike.
Natasha Howard or Breonna Jones?
It's interesting.
Buddy.
Natasha Howard. However, we need more made layups than we saw on Saturday.
You sticking with missed layup content with the W. This is what you're doing with your platform?
No. Don't set me up like that. Come on now.
Could have got Jamal for this.
Wait a minute. No.
No.
The Dunkers know what we do here. I am simply commenting on one game. No. This is a bad shot. This is a bad set big run. We're not about to. No. Absolutely not.
This man complained about the type of content he would get from certain people and then came with their mind. Jewel Lloyd or Ryan Howard?
Anyway, Jewel Lloyd.
Kayla McBride or Alicia Gray?
Alicia Gray.
Emma Meesemann or Cheyenne Parker?
Wow, that's a fun one. That's a fun one. I will take... Man, that's a good one. Emma Meesemann.
Sophie Cunningham or Nalissa Smith?
Nalissa Smith.
Mariah Jefferson or Ari McDonald?
Ari McDonald.
Hanzu or Isabel Harris?
Hanzu.
Rebecca Gardner or Brittany Sykes?
Brittany Sykes.
Breonna Turner or Teresa Plaisance?
Breonna Turner is my answer.
Allie Quigley or Diana Taurasi?
I was waiting on this one. I got slandered in the watch party for saying I'd rather have Allie. And I would still
say it out loud.
Say it with your chest. Say it with your chest. I want to know why this is so.
No. I want you to answer the question. Allie Quigley or Diana Taurasi?
I think Allie's been better this year as a whole. Now, so if I can add, I'll take Allie.
All right.
So again, I ask, like,
How do you feel about that? You feel good about that?
I don't know now. Like, again, this isn't the first time I've had an opinion that other people don't agree with, but I asked you during the watch party, like, is that a hot take? Yes. You said scorching. I didn't ask why, and then I've got nothing but commentary.
It's a hot take. I love Allie Quigley, but no. All right, return to the segment. The hashtag is Big Flashback.
Okay.
So on July 12th, you stated that if your team isn't one in legit contention or at the least very good and or two in possession of a strong defensive infrastructure, you need not apply for the Donovan Mitchell sweepstakes. You won't get the return on investment you want.
Okay.
You then further listed a set of teams that included Miami, Toronto, the Knicks, the Cavs, and the Orlando Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Who, last I checked, have neither of those things. Then you doubled down on this because of an Orlando suggestion on the low post. How do you feel? Because the Orlando Magic don't qualify.
I think I would disagree on the defensive infrastructure portion. They have a lot of defensive talent on the roster.
Where?
You mean where?
I'm listening.
Like, what? Markelle Fultz, good point of attack defender. Jalen Suggs, good defender, particularly off ball. Franz Wagner, good defender. Wendell Carter, very good defender at the center spot. Scheme versatile. Mo Bamba solid.
Half of those guys wouldn't be there if they got done. Mitchell.
It depends on who they're throwing in there.
So you feel good about it, is what you're saying?
Like, I'm fine. I even said in the tweet that I mentioned Orlando that it won't happen.
Had a defensive rating equivalent to the Brooklyn Nets, but defensive infrastructure. Anyways, Jermichael Green to the Warriors. Thoughts?
I like that for them.
How do you feel about Calvin Booth saying that he's good at rolling and shooting, but space, ..
Wait. Run that back.
He said he's good at rolling,
mm-hmm.
good at shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Space isn't his strength.
Space isn't his strength. Wow.
Any thoughts?
That's interesting.
Okay.
Transparent as well. But yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on Bam Adebayo?
I just don't know how I feel about that shot. That No, I would like to see Bam taking some threes next year. That'd be cool. Like, I don't know how much stock you want to put into, like, Miami Pro League clips, but I'd like to see that confidence at the very least. See that consistently from him.
Okay. Did Giannis send a text or make a call to get his brother traded to the Bucks G League affiliate?
I think a call seems more like his speed.
Okay. How do you feel about the Pistons bringing the teal jerseys back?
I like it. It's good stuff.
Do you like the Spurs alternate uniforms?
I have not seen the Spurs alternate uniforms.
Oh, they're black and they say SATX. I would say it out loud, but yeah, there might go the clean rating if I say it too fast.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me see if I can find those. I'm assuming you have more.
I do.
Novik. Okay. So while you do that, I will look for the jerseys.
Kemba Walker to the Hornets, or why won't they just re-sign Isaiah Thomas?
I Kemba, like, he means so much to Charlotte area in particular. I think if you could bring Kemba back and give the Hornets desperately need a vet in the ring. Kemba's a really good dude. And also the city loves him.
Okay. Is Damian Lillard going to be this generation's Dirk?
Like pre-2011? Sure. No. Dirk adjacent, I guess.
Okay. Is Russell Westbrook heading down in Allen Iverson path?
God, it feels like it. I don't like that, though.
The hashtag is Big Agenda. Kendrick Perkins, July 20th. If Russell Westbrook's not careful, his career could possibly end like Allen Iverson's career did. So there you go.
Wow. Anyway, I've seen the jerseys. I do like these. You said it, and I was like, wait, this is going to be a mess. But like, I can rock with these. I like these.
The key to the jerseys for me is the alternative court. If you don't have the court that matches, I don't want to see it.
Okay.
Like, those Milwaukee's uniforms were really great until it was just the regular Milwaukee court. And I was like, yo.
Wait, what are we doing here?
What are y'all doing? You had an opportunity. How do you feel about comparing teams from different eras?
I'm so glad you brought this up. Oh, man. Like, I just don't. I feel like as I've gotten deeper into this, like, I've lost the interest in these kind of conversations. I don't know if this is just me being old man yells at cloud or what.
The hashtag is big time, folks. Continue.
No, not big time at all. It's probably just a problem of me being on Twitter for too long. Like, that's probably more what it is. Like, I just don't. The conversations can be fun. Like, I feel like you have to have the people that are going to contextualize it. And if you aren't doing that, then it's just going to be, this is going to boil down to our era is better because we're more athletic and we know math or whatever, or our era is better because we're tougher and we don't cry over fouls and flop and whatever, whatever, whatever. And the production, I mean, the conversation just isn't productive, right? But I don't care. Like, what was it? The 96 Bulls, 98 Bulls versus the 2017 Warriors.
Like, I don't know, man. Draymond got bored and said, you know, comparing teams from different eras isn't cool. Then did it to show y'all how uncool it was. And everybody ran with it.
Yeah, that was funny. I love the setup tweet. It is, oh, I noticed that we would beat these teams by 20 and 40 respectively. I was like, wait a minute. That's not an observation you make. That's an opinion. That's not. Wait a minute.
Here's the thing. It's way more fun to watch old games with a modern slant, with a modern eye. Like, I remember when the pandemic first hit, I would go back to watch old games because, boy, that's all there was. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, wow, this is kind of modern adjacent. The spacing is kind of there. It's that they're just like 2 feet in instead of behind the three-point line. Or, hey, yeah, look at the movement to get to a post-up. But the movement was there. So it's kind of fun to kind of tie things together. But, you know, we could just talk about team versus team and all that good stuff. How do you feel and why did the Arizona Cardinals tell Kyler Murray he had to go watch film?
They saw him. No, but that's such a weird thing to that's a weird thing to put in, because like it just felt Wiggins adjacent in Minnesota, to where it's like, hey, we will give you this max deal if you promise to work hard. And it's just like, brother, if you have to tell him to work hard, you should probably just let him get to restricted free agency if that's what it's going to be, which I'm not going to get on the restricted free agency soapbox today, I promise.
Please don't.
But like, just do that if you don't feel confident if you have to do that. And so for the Arizona perspective, the whole Kyler Murray thing is just funny. Like, the agent puts out this whole thing some months ago about all the things that Kyler's done, and this is the contract that we want, this is the contract he deserves, and if the Arizona Cardinals really value and respect him, then they will agree to this, yada, yada, yada. There was just nothing for 2 months. And I was like, oh, well, this is neat. And so the fact that your franchise quarterback, who has revitalized the franchise, but also hasn't taken said franchise like the Super Bowl or anything like that, so it's like a middle ground there. But like, you get here and it's like, hey, we will give you over $200 million, and it's not fully guaranteed, but we'll give you over $200 million if you promise to do independent study for 4 hours a week. And you can't have your TV on while you're doing it. You can't be playing video games while you're doing it. You can't. And it's just like, yo, if you got these stipulations, and then the framing of the release is really what kills me. Because I think it was Adam Schefter, which, boy, has he had a 2 or 3 year stretch on this app. But that's a whole nother thing for another day. And it's like, it wasn't him. Let me apologize. It wasn't him. Thanks, Ian Rappaport. It's like, contracts are about give and take. And it comes with that. I'm just like, wait. I wouldn't put this out.
I think it was an out. The language was strong.
Yeah, it was. Very.
If it don't go right, hey, we love that iPad, dog. Nah.
I'm just like,
yeah, get your homework done.
I was like, this is just weird, man.
It's an out. It's an out. How many bottles of the salmon colored sauce did you purchase?
Zero. Also, the F in FDA stands for food. I just think that has to be said for rich. What are we doing, man? Why is this being sold? Why is this being purchased? Have you seen the label on that bottle? Have you seen the freaking label on that bottle? That we are in peak off-season content, right?
Folks,
now.
I am running the offense tonight.
How do you even... What about that looks appetizing, first and foremost? And then, like, this stuff is being shipped out. And, like, it ain't even help. Nothing about this is safe. And then she gets pressed about the ridiculousness of this. And it's FDA approved. What do you mean? I'm not selling medicine. I'm like, what?
No, I'll get you some. Don't worry about it.
Literally selling Pepto-Bismol, but whatever.
Wow. And just sponsorships flying out the window. What are you going to do if you get caught?
Thank you for listening to this episode of... What an awful song. We should not be co-signing that in any way, shape, or form. Like, the lyrics at the league contradict themselves. Like, this ain't even... Oh, man. Like, there is catchy toxic music, and then there's whatever that is. Like, that ain't even catchy toxic. That's just bad. And then we got Jermaine Dupri's, like, the people complained about this song. Like, oh, don't condescend us over bad music. Anyway, thank you for listening to this episode of The Thumper's. Unless you had more. Nope. Okay, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Also, join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you have the capability. We're having fun in there. We're setting up watch parties. Join the Dunker Spot Discord if you have a next-gen system. We're playing some FIFA, playing some 2K. Other games are going to pop up as well. Just basically Dunker Spot community members hopping over there to like play video games. So hop in there as well. Also, in regards to the watch parties, We now have the capability of watching old games if they are available on YouTube. So if you have suggestions for us, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up in the Dunker Spot Discord, hit us up in Dunker Spot community, hit us up in the comment section during watch parties that we're hosting. Let us know what you think would be cool for us to watch. We just may do it. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
All heart, grit, grind.